if you bring awareness to a place and soft in your mind, as far as like, I'm just here gently watching you. I'm not trying to fix you in any way. I'm just going to be here and hold space for you, so to speak, for your own self, that these things shift, and they shift pretty quickly. And for the most part, they shift permanently.
Hi there, healers. It's KJ here. Welcome to the Stories of Astonishing Light podcast. Today's episode feels especially relevant and crucial. I knew I wanted to share it with you as soon as possible. It's because I have this incredible conversation with my friend, Pamela Stokes. Pamela is a trauma-informed healer with an extensive, impressive background in education, movement, and music. In our conversation, Pamela shares with us her astonishing story, from early dreams of being a professional dancer in New York City to studying and then teaching biology to hundreds of students, from elementary school to nurses, mental health practitioners, and surgeons. But through it all, she was aware of a common denominator: pain. Pamela sought gentle resolution to the chronic pain of her fibromyalgia diagnosis through inquiries into neuroscience, movement, and sensory motor training. Taking what she learned in her own recovery, Pamela created a blend of movement, sound, and mindfulness into a method she calls somatic release. This is a two-part episode. There's a lot of information here, guys, so we wanted to split it up, because we are exploring everything from science to knowing when to pivot to trauma healing via neuroplasticity. So the body tells its story loud and clear. The key is when and how we choose to listen. I hope you enjoy part one of my revolutionary talk with Pamela.
Well, thank you, my dear Pamela, for joining me today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
We were just speaking a little bit before I hit record about how we're so grateful that we've crossed paths.
Indeed.
You had reached out to me. You were so sweet. You had reached out to me and said, I think we're on the same paths. Let's connect when we can. And it was the gentlest, kindest invitation. I knew that I wanted to talk more with you, get to know you as a friend. And then now it's blown up into a full-on obsession. Because you and I have had an opportunity to start doing a little work together, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I was just saying to Pamela, my friends, that she has taught me so many things in a short period of time, and I'm just so very grateful.
My pleasure, really.
Well, I'm so happy that we're going to talk a little bit more about what you do and what your mission is, and to share this with more and more people. Mm-hmm. And so again, thank you again for coming on the show.
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity too, because I have my own podcast, as you know, but yeah, it's nice to be exposing my material to other audiences. So I do appreciate the opportunity, KJ. Thanks so much.
It is my pleasure. Thank you. Well, I like to start off my conversations with a few opening icebreaker questions. And one of them is, do you have a mantra or a theme that's providing you guidance at this time?
Yes, I would have to say that what I'm learning right now about the physics of the universe, the field that's out there, and I come from a place of science. And so when I use terms like the field and energy and things like that, it can sound kind of woo-woo, but it's actually, I mean, we're talking about physics here. So what I'm enjoying learning about are these new discoveries in the world of physics that are finding that we absolutely do influence everything that's happening in our world. And so by our thoughts and our emotions, and I certainly can see that very simply, if you have a negative thought, your body is going to respond to that in certain ways and create perhaps disease. And so we see this in a physiological sense, but I'm also just coming from a place of being brought up in a religious household with a strong religion, every Sunday going to worship. And then as I became an adult, I said, I'm not so sure about this. And so what I really am finding interesting is that now I have a definition of God that doesn't make me cringe. The God that I'm not worshiping, but the God that is in me, the God that makes everything go. So it's sort of like the, to me, it's sort of the go button. Like it makes everything work. It's making everything go. And so we can call that God or source or universal energy, or as the physicists are calling it now, the vacuum fluctuations. And, you know, and I go, oh, okay. So really what we're talking about is energetics, you know, the energy of the waves and the frequencies and all of that. So I'm enjoying the revelations and the opening of the verbiage around the religious part of myself, the early part of myself, and the spirituality that's developing through this concept of we can make things change in our lives, and by movement, by thought, by emotion, all of the different ways that we can move energy around, we can influence our world. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so empowering.
Yes.
To switch it up and realize that we have a collaborative involvement in change. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, me too.
You mentioned a couple things that made my ears perk about starting in, well, one of them is in starting in science. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know a little bit more about that. And then secondly, being brought up in a religious household.
Yeah. So my father was an entomologist and he studied insects, but he'd studied insects in order to learn how to kill them. He developed pesticides. So he was a scientist, an actual scientist, where he ran experiments on these different chemicals and things and to prevent the bugs from growing and so forth. So I grew up with that aspect of life. In dinner conversations, we would be asked science based questions. And if we didn't know the answer, we would be looking into the encyclopedias back in the day before the internet. Of course, we we had encyclopedias instead. So he had that background and he went full circle. Actually, it's kind of nice to say this. At the end of his life, he quit the whole pesticide thing and became an expert witness and was actually helping people who had been poisoned by them. So I feel that his life was kind of a karmic completion. And he was able to, I feel, go out smiling.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was his leaning. And so science was a big part of my upbringing. You know, it was around me all the time. And the other part of him was he was a Quaker. And what Quakers are about is there's no real leader in the group. It's a meeting. They come together and the meeting can last anywhere from an hour to 3 hours and anyone gets to talk and everyone's called friend. And they were anti-slavery and they were anti-race issues. And, you know, so they were just very, very open, and everyone was friend. From an early age, I started calling people friend, and that has been my thing. And I really enjoy feeling like that's what we all are. We actually are all friends. We can be anyway. So that sort of aspect of the religion was something that I felt sort of more connected to. Whereas my mom was raised Catholic, Irish Catholic, and very traditional, the veils and the white and the gloves and, like, you know, catechism and first communion and blah, 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 all the sacraments that you go through. And yet she wasn't born again. So this was, you know, she wasn't proselytizing us. It was more like, here are these teachings and come to church with me and we'll go sing songs. And so I enjoyed that part of it too, the singing and the unity of the church. But one of the things that was really hard for me as a child was seeing the images of Jesus with all the blood and, you know, the gore.
Yes.
And feeling as a small person, you know, the words, he died for your sins. And I was kind of like, but I didn't do anything. You know, that was,
yes, 100%. Yes.
So that was a hard thing to sort of swallow and to sort of, you know, take in. And then the concept of heaven and hell was really difficult for me too, because I thought, well, that doesn't really make sense. Like, if you do something really bad, but the rest of the time you're pretty good, you know, how does it, like, why is it so cut and dry? So I was really questioning things as I was growing up and feeling kind of constrained by it. So when I grew up and moved out of the house and thought, okay, well, it's Sunday, I guess I go to church. That's what I do, right? I went to a church and I had moved to New York City pretty young. I was 17. So I found this church in a neighborhood, but it turned out to be, it was all in Latin. It's kind of a funny mass. So I get in there and I'm hearing the things. And I kind of looked around and I'm kind of thinking, feeling to myself, it's like, I don't think I fit in with this. This doesn't feel like me. I'm praying, you know, like I'm worshiping something. And what I really felt from the biological point of view and from the nature point of view is that we're all connected. Like there's no difference between a little bug and myself. You know, we are animated by this God force, this source, this energetic source. We're all animated by it. And to put one thing above another's just felt wrong to me. So I said, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do this church thing anymore. And I never talked about it so much with my mom. And then if I'd visit and she'd say, let's go to church, I'd go to church with her. But I just kind of let that go.
Wow. I imagine with all of these resources available for you. And when I say resources, you have your father studying entomology, and then you have the exposure and understanding of the Quaker way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the Catholicism.
Yeah.
What did you want to do when you were a child? What were you fascinated with?
So, you know, I had the brains to do pretty much whatever I wanted to do academically. I got straight A's all through high school and, you know, felt very competent in math and science and these things. I had a very influential seventh grade biology teacher. And I thought to myself, wow, that's really cool. Like a female scientist. Cool. Yeah, I want to do that. So actually, there was a big part of me that wanted to go into science. And I just sort of put that on the back burner because I also had the movement practice. So I was a dancer. And abilities were, I felt, you know, top notch. And my teachers thought so, too. And I ended up moving to New York City when I was 17 to pursue dance and got into the field, got in there with the dancers. And I was dancing with these people who are like, they were on Broadway. So I felt competent. I felt like, yeah, I can do this. And then I was also working at a talent agency for dancers to get gigs and realizing that the gigs were far and few between and few and far between. I said that backwards. And that these highly skilled dancers were doing like toothpaste commercials. And it's really sort of sad and or industrials where they weren't getting paid, but they were working really hard.
Yes.
And then the Broadway, even just the Broadway dancers that I was dancing with and got to meet, just how sort of fleeting and unsure of a career it was. And so after that year, realizing, yeah, I could do this, but I said, I don't really want to do this. So change course, change tack. And I ended up going to UC Berkeley and studying biology. But that got sort of cut at the end, you know, at the end of the first year. I met my then husband, you know, my boyfriend. I met my boyfriend and we got really close really fast. And 35 years later, you know, we were together 35 years. But in the time that he was chasing music, I was completing my degree. So it took me 9 years, 6 different colleges, but I finished at UCLA. And I have a degree in biology. So it took a while, but I ended up doing that. So I do have that background, the biology. And my thought was I wanted to help people cure cancer. That was my thing. My mom had cancer. She survived it fine. But I just felt like there was something that I could do along those lines of being in the field of science. So when I was at UCLA, I had the opportunity to work in a microbiology lab and to work with some of the stuff that people were trying to find, you know, the little mutations and working with DNA and all of that kind of thing. So it was pretty cool to be in that world. But you know what DNA looks like? It looks like, you know, it's just like white goo. It's there's nothing very exciting about it. And the work is very tedious, but I got to do it. And again, so there, I feel like I had a taste enough of it. And I went, yeah, lab science, don't think I want to do that. So I ended up being a teacher. And I taught biology for a few years. And then I had a couple of kids. And after the kids were a little bit bigger, I was what they call a science specialist. And this was really fun because I got to travel from classroom to classroom. And I brought all my gear with me. And I did hands-on science with the kids. It was a blast.
Oh my gosh. If you would have come to my classroom, I know I would have enjoyed science more.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I mean, the kids were like, oh, she's coming. The science teacher's coming. Yay. You know, they were all excited. And the teachers liked it too, because they got a free period. But I would go in and teach these science classes, and it was all hands-on stuff. So it was fun. I got the opportunity to teach the kids. I also was teaching teachers how to use this science program, which was developed at UC Berkeley, actually, the Berkeley lab there. Mm. So I got to teach teachers, and then I was also running the science fair. And so
of course you were.
So I got to teach the whole scientific method and how they present and how they do their experiments. And so I would bring in the parents and teach them basically, what are we going to be doing here with this project, and educating the parents about that too. So teaching.
Wow.
All different levels.
A dancer, New York City. You saw where that could or could not lead you to.
Sure.
At one point, were you thinking you were going to be the professional dancer? Was that your hope?
Exactly. So I thought Broadway, either be a dancer on Broadway or a choreographer. That was the other part of it too.
Okay. And do you think because of your positioning at the talent agency that might have also been a bit of the logical piece, or that voice going, well, but let's see where this actually takes you. Mm. If so, was it hard for you to decide, you know what, let me go back to some of my other roots or my other interests?
Mm-hmm. No, I think at that point, New York City is kind of a hard place. And being 17 and not really having the passion after several months of being there, and just kind of realizing, gosh, this is not really what I thought I wanted. So I think it was pretty easy, pretty clear to me that staying in New York City and just getting a job, or just being, a person was not really enough for me. I needed to do some more things. And so school felt good, college felt right, and science felt right. Yeah, for sure.
What strikes me is, in a way, it feels like you also have come full circle. And we can talk a little bit more about what you're doing now to incorporate the soma and movement.
Right.
And science.
I know. Yeah. It's funny because when I look at my life, I go, oh, well, I learned that then, and I learned that, and I learned that. Like, all these different things that I've learned along the way have brought me to this place where I am now. And I go, wow, those were critically important pieces. So I love learning new things. That's one of the things that is true about me. And I think it's because of the dopamine that you get from when you learn, right? Yeah, it feels really good. And it's kind of our superpower, because when you learn something, your brain goes into a different state and allows you to do even more with it. So I love learning. And so all the things that I've learned along the way, for sure, have become very important to what I'm doing now. Yeah, certainly.
Let's take a second to pause in this amazing conversation for a quick check-in. If you're enjoying this episode and have found value in the stories from the guests who've joined me on the podcast, I would love it if you could rate and leave a review for the show. You can do so on Apple Podcasts or any of your listening platforms. Your reviews help boost visibility of the show and spread the word to more listeners. Plus, I love hearing from you. If you have found anything you've heard on this show valuable or helpful for you, please let us know. And it's really easy to do, and it takes maybe a minute. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/astonishingstories. Also, a little something to consider. Every review you leave enters you into a chance for winning a free 30-minute private session with me to discuss anything of your choice. I'll pick the name of the winner every Friday and announce it on my Instagram and Facebook stories. So let's hear it, friends. ratethispodcast.com/astonishingstories. I really appreciate you.
Can we talk a little bit about the way that you have synthesized somatic release and how you really found that as you were seeking your own healing?
Exactly. So one of the things that was pretty prominent in my life was body pain. Yeah. And so before dance, I was a gymnast. And I think that definitely puts a lot of pressure on the body, right? So from ages 6 to 11, developmentally, like, my physical body maybe wasn't right. I was a little tall and so forth. Anyway, gymnastics felt kind of harsh. And there was a lot of body pain. And I don't know if it was just growing pains or if it was, you know, just overuse of the body. And it's kind of abusive, gymnastics.
My first thought was actually jarring. I feel like it's so jarring to the joints and to the body. It's beautiful. Exactly. And of course, impressive, but my gosh.
Yeah. Well, my favorite event was the floor, which is basically dance. Yeah. So when the dance instructor came in for us to help us upgrade our floor routines, I was like, ooh, I think I like dance. Like this, mm-hmm. this looks really good to me. This feels really good. So when I went into dance, it felt natural. I have rhythm naturally. Mm-hmm. I think that's from my mom. She plays piano by ear. So she had this sort of natural rhythm. So anyway, just, you know, got to go fully into that. What was your question? I'm sorry.
No, not at all. You're getting there because okay. I had an open question around how you utilize somatic release and
oh,
really
right.
you were finding that it was in your quest to heal your own body.
Exactly. So dance became the thing, and then ballet was important for the technique. So
yes.
with ballet, you wear point shoes, and again with the pain. So pain was kind of kept coming back for me. And then the stretching, and that was the other thing. I did a lot of stretching and stretching to the point of pain. Then I discovered at about age 18, I discovered yoga, the meditative qualities of it, the mindfulness qualities of it, the poses. It was awesome for me. I was already in alignment because of dance. And so it just felt really good to do the Iyengar form, which is all about alignment and so forth. But again, there was pain. So there was, you know, many, many years of yoga, but and I got the opportunity to teach yoga to various age groups and so forth during that span of time. So many years, over 30 years of yoga, but more pain. At one point, though, I said, you know, enough. I need to find something here that will release this from me. So internet searching, just finding out what can be done for this. And I was basically dealing with hip pain, a lot of hip pain. And I saw this one little thing and it's like, you know, don't stretch. And I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. You know, stretching is bad. And I'm like, I've had a lot of pain with stretching. Maybe they've got something here. So what it was a guy that was teaching Hannah Somatics. And Hannah Somatics is an offshoot of Feldenkrais. Feldenkrais' method is something that's been around since the 70s. Moshe Feldenkrais was a physicist and a judo master and also had developed pain himself and developed the Feldenkrais methods. So through this lineage comes Hannah Somatics. I went to a Hannah Somatics practitioner and within the first 5 minutes of doing this particular movement with me, my hip pain that had been there for a decade or more was gone.
Wow.
I jumped off the table and I walked down the hall and I was like, I cannot believe this. This is amazing. I need to learn this. I want to share this. I need to yes. tell everybody I know that this really works and how comfortable you can be and how you can do it yourself. And it's just empowering. And it was like life-changing, like that mini light bulbs went on for me.
Oh my gosh.
So I started teaching it right away. I trained in it first and then I started teaching it right away to my friends. I'm like, you got to check this out. So I was just teaching everybody I knew. While I was practicing it myself, I started tremoring and just naturally like the body starts to shake. And so I read about that and I found out that this is the completion of the trauma response. This is something that actually happens in animals and we as humans tend to shut it down or they'll give us a blanket and say, oh, you must be cold. You know, if you're going through a shock or something, it's the shaking and the shaking has to happen. In other words, if it doesn't, and they've seen this in animals, if it doesn't, the animal doesn't thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So this is important. And so then I got some training around that. I got some more training having to do with trauma and how to release trauma. And then I said, okay, I've got this movement piece, this Hannah Somatics and the Feldenkrais stuff. And I find that this really works well with this whole world of trauma. So I've combined the two. So I have this movement piece and then I've got, which is also mindfulness. It's bringing awareness. That's the somatic component, right? It's bringing awareness to what you're noticing as you're doing these movements and what kinds of things are shifting for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of rabbit holed down into things like EFT tapping and
yes.
yeah, and some sound stuff. So working with sound, like making sound with your own voice and the whole polyvagal theory and somatic experiencing. I took some bits from there. I got a nice training in a hands-on technique that's called BASE, which is body work and somatic education, taught by a person who also teaches somatic experiencing. So he's in that realm. He's a physical therapist and a psychologist. So he's got both of those backgrounds as well. And that allows me to actually find for people to find constrictions in their body that they otherwise wouldn't even know existed, either constrictions and also offline where the information isn't traveling. And these are the trauma responses. This is what happens. Our body responds to trauma in a couple of different ways. When we have the activated, the sympathetic activation, you can get constrictions. And when you have the dorsal vagal shutdown or the parasympathetic shutdown where things are deactivated, sometimes we go offline. And so this can be in very small places, like, for example, the fascia, which is the connective tissue around your kidney. Like that place could be constricted. Like your kidney could be fine, but the fascia around it could be constricted. And when we find these constrictions, what's cool is basically if you bring awareness, and especially if you bring touch, which right now I can't really do that because of the pandemic, but hoping to at some point soon to get back into the touch work. But if you bring awareness to a place and soft in your mind, as far as like, I'm just here gently watching you. I'm not trying to fix you in any way. I'm just going to be here and hold space for you, so to speak, for your own self, that these things shift, and they shift pretty quickly. And for the most part, they shift permanently. So I was watching people change dramatically from having something that was traumatizing to the point where, here's an example, this woman who she could not finish her PhD. She had all of her training, she had all of her skills, she had done all of the internships, she was a psychotherapist, and she couldn't finish her PhD because there was a trauma in her life. So she went to a life coach, and the life coach was like, whoa, I don't think I can do this. Here's my friend Pamela. Pamela, are you interested? And I said, yeah, let me work with her. So when I did, and we found this constriction in her body, she had no idea. She was just like, what? Like, that's where it is? Like, how is that possible? But this is what the body does.
She was aware of the trauma. Or are you saying that she also didn't realize that she was holding?
She just didn't know that it was stuck in her body.
Stuck there. Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Right. Ooh. And so when I could find it for her, and it was like, oh, here it is, you know, let's go ahead and in there. You know, a lot of stuff has to come out. A lot of stuff has to pass through you. And so we start with resourcing. We start with finding good things, things that feel really good, and remembering these good things, and sort of getting the body ready and getting the mind ready. And then these constrictions can just be released. And so that's why I like to call it somatic release, because we're bringing that somatic awareness. We're using the mindfulness. I use a little tapping. I use a little sound. I've blended this, you know, that's a synthesis, right? So I've blended all the different things. So we've got the movement, we've got the sound, we've got the tapping, the awareness. Yeah. And then just gentle kindness really is a lot of what this is.
Yes.
The catharsis doesn't happen. It's not like someone's screaming and crying. And it's not like that. It's very gentle. In fact, if you watched a session, you'd be kind of like, whoa, is anything even happening?
Right, right.
It's very quiet and soft.
Quiet. Quiet and soft, gentle and kind.
Yeah. And then, you know, occasionally tears will come, but these aren't the big, heavy, you know, sobbing. This isn't that. This is more just like there's a release. And actually, one of the things I learned, which I think is fascinating, are the tears that we release when we are releasing emotion are the components of those tears are very different from the tears that we create when we're just like chopping onions, where there's an irritant.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, interesting.
There is actually something that kind of needs to come out. And so I, you know, when those little tears, just let them pour down your face, you know, let them feel, you know, feel what that feels like to be releasing something. So anyway, after we did our sessions, and I think I met with her 5 times total. Well, we found other things that were also, you know, there. And oftentimes that's what we find is we release one a place, and then another place goes, well, what about me? You know, it's safe enough now. I can reveal to you that there's this other thing over here. So we cleared away a lot of things. But after five sessions, she was like, her whole personality came to life. She became confident and calm, and her relationship calmed down. The drama went away. She finished her PhD in a weekend. She just had to, basically, she just had to write it up.
Yes.
She finished it in a weekend. She finished her thesis. And so super energetic. She lost weight. She wasn't even trying. She quit smoking. I mean, there were just so many things that came from those few sessions. And that's why I'm kind of excited, like really excited, is to let people know that, you know, PTSD is not something you have to live with. It's not something that you just have to deal with. And there are ways to come out of traumas, and even stuff that, like, she didn't even remember some things. Like, she said, whoa, like, I think that's really young, you know, maybe 8 months, 9 months old.
Yeah,
that she had heard stories about, right? But she didn't remember it, but it was in her body, so we could find it.
That's powerful in saying, there's so many things that were powerful that in her story and the work that you did with her, but in this one little phrase here where you had said, it's in the body.
It's in the body.
The body is this revelatory treasure trove of information. It's communicating every single nanosecond with us.
Right.
And it's about noticing and stopping to listen to it. What stands out for me in doing some somatic work with you and just somatic work in general is this really kind and loving prompt that you'll do, which is you'll ask or you'll just suggest, invite.
Yeah.
What do you notice?
What are you noticing, right? Mm-hmm.
What are you noticing? Where are you noticing it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just notice. There's no judgment there.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then getting quiet enough to even understand that this communication has been happening all along. It's just that we haven't necessarily been listening to it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I realized about my pain. And I was actually diagnosed with fibromyalgia at one point. So that was, it was so chronic. It was, you know, waking me up and so forth and not fun. And so the doctor just said, well, you know, I guess you can't walk uphill and here's a pill. And like,
no,
this is your life. And it's like, yeah, no, I think there's more. There's more here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. There is indeed so much more to this story. So we're stopping here so that you can catch your breath and marinate in the goodness that Pamela shared with us already. And this was just the first half of our chat, you guys. So my mind has already been blown about 60 times. How about you? I keep thinking about how impactful and empowered we are just by bringing awareness to the somatic component, our bodies, how our bodies store a wealth of information, how we might not even recognize that the energy stored in us, which it can take a variety of forms like anger, grief, unaddressed trauma, until we look to reposition ourselves to create new pathways and new habits. And are we willing to unlearn what we've been conditioned to do all this time? Well, so next session, we dive even deeper, if you can believe it. And Pamela guides us through an experiential exercise of somatic release. In the meantime, check the show notes for more information on how you can work with Pamela and for resources around the topics that we explore in our conversation. And as always, if you enjoy the stories you hear on this podcast, we appreciate any love you can share in the form of subscribing, rating, sharing with friends, leaving a review. Take good care, my healers, and we will see you very soon for the second part of this incredible, expansive, inspiring conversation with Pamela.
Thank you for listening to the Stories of Astonishing Light podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can support this podcast in three different ways. Number one, post a screenshot of the podcast on your Instagram stories or in your feed and tag me at @blissbeginswithin so I can repost you. Number two, share this podcast with a friend whom you think might enjoy it as well. And third, leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts so that we can continue to grow our audience and reach more listeners. I'm so grateful to spend time with you sharing such resilient stories. We'll see you next time.